Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Artist First World Radio Network, home of the best new music you've never heard, and home of the best new talk shows you need to hear. Please don't forget to visit our archives page at www.artistfirst.com, where you can hear all our past shows for free and on demand. You are tuning in to the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show. This show airs at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time every Monday. For more information about this show and to listen to past shows for free, please visit artistfirst.com/maxine.htm. And don't forget to follow Artist First on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is @artist_first. And now here's your host of the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show, Dr. Maxine Thompson.
Good evening. I want to thank everyone for tuning in to the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show. I'm Dr. Maxine Thompson of MaxineThompsonBooks.com and MaxineThompson.com. I'm the author of The Ebony Tree, award-winning novel Hostage of Lies, short story collection A Place Called Home, and latest novel L.A. Blues. I'm also a contributor to best-selling anthology Secret Lovers, Never Knew Love Like This Before, All in the Family, and Proverbs for the People. All books are available nationwide or at my websites. You can also get my e-books, The Hush Hush Secrets of Writing Fiction That Sells and The Hush Hush Secrets of Making Money as a Writer as e-books. And the anthologies are also available as e-books as well as L.A. Blues. Tonight's guest is Tamika Newhouse, a national best-selling author. She is the author of several novels, the most recently reissued one by Kensington. The novel is The Ultimate No-No. She is also the CEO of Delphine Publications. Good evening. How are you doing, Tamika?
Hi, Maxine. I'm great. It's definitely about time that I got on your show, so I'm excited to be on here tonight.
Okay. Yes, it's been, I've been watching you from afar, watching your groups and the different things that you're involved in, and I had said for at least in the back of my mind for at least 6 months, I said, you know what, I wonder if she has an agent.
Oh, Lord.
So I'm so happy that, you know, I'm your agent now, and, you know, we'll see what happens. I do see big things for you. You've got a bright future ahead of you.
I surely appreciate it.
Yes, yeah, so tell the audience about some of the activities you're involved in. I forgot about your AAMBC book club and the radio station.
Well, yeah, that's exactly how I got started back in 2008, around February. I was in the need to be into a book club, but I was in a new city, didn't know many people. So therefore, I took to my MySpace page, and I just started posting up books and things that I had read. And in the process of doing that, I had named it After the American Book Club. Authors and other readers started requesting me as a friend. And so I started talking back and forth to these people, getting to know who they are, seeing how they got published. And I pretty much had a crash course on the publishing ropes and the book industry and all of that. I pretty much learned this industry from a lot of different people, as well as taking in my own research. And so with that book club, I market and I support other writers such as myself, just by giving them that exposure they yearn. I pride myself in promoting and displaying books that are not on all the other black book websites. Because I know before I even got into this industry, I saw the same artists everywhere, all the time. And I thought those were the only artists that ever existed. And so when I found out there was thousands and thousands of more, I make sure that I go and I support and I promote those people, the ones that get that lack of support. So that's with AAMBC. And so with that, with me learning the business, I decided to go ahead and publish a book I wrote when I was 19, about almost 2.5 years prior to this, so back in 06. And I did the research, and I launched my own publishing company, named after my mother, Delphine. And from there, I mean, I just kept moving. I just kept going.
You have made a lot of moves in a short time. I know twice you've been voted the best self-published author of the year, and congratulations on your most recent win. Didn't you just win a couple of weeks ago or 3 weeks ago?
I did. In New York City, I did. I won the same category I won my debut year out in 09. I took home the title again for self-published author of the year, and I had no idea did not expect to win this because I have been nominated 3 years in a row. And although I won my first year, I didn't win my second year. And so going into the third year, I did not campaign for it. I did not tell people to vote for me for it because one of my close colleagues and best friends was in the same category. So I was wanting for everybody, including her, to get the opportunity to share in that title, you know, because I've won it once, and my book club has won an award before, and I've been continuously nominated. So I was like, let's go ahead and share the love. I don't want to tell people to vote for her. So when I discovered that I, in fact, did win, it was a major, major shocker. And I was completely, completely humbled. And so I felt really blessed. So, yes. Now I'm holding altogether four statuettes. I'm excited.
Yes, great. And all these are good for building your platform. And you've done such a great job of promoting yourself and meeting editors. You even have the honor of that you were one. You got your own book deal with Kinsey. So it's made it easy for me, you know. I'm sure that it's just going to be a matter of time because you already have gotten your foot in the door by yourself.
I definitely agree, and working with you is to help give me that more, to kind of solidify that just a little bit more. And Arthur's and other my other colleagues and peers often ask me, how did I get a book deal without an agent? Because in this day and age, especially being a new author or however you're published, it's really hard to get an editor that works for a major publishing house to look at your novel when you're not represented by an agent or an agency or whatever you may want to call it. And I always stress to them that, well, I just traveled and I put my face and I planted myself in certain situations to make sure that these people saw me and that I stay relevant in their review. You know, I want them to be able to see me and say, who's that person? You know, I wanted my name to be in their mouth. So although I always do travel to do book signings and to self-promote, my number one source is always to network. Because at the end of the day, I may make a connection that's going to benefit my career and take me to a higher level. So if anyone is ever looking to, you know, even solicit an agent, or even solidify a book deal, make sure you continue to network and stay consistent at that.
Right. And see, what you're doing is the publishing industry has changed. They were looking at the fact that, didn't you become an Essence best-selling author as a self-published author?
I did not. I did hit a couple smaller best-selling lists, but I don't really judge myself off of the bestsellers list because it's all politics. So I really don't judge myself on those lists. I never made the Essence bestseller, and I don't even think that list actually even exists anymore. So
right.
I don't really focus on
those
lists.
There. But, you know, now a lot of times agents and editors are going to Kindle and looking for the top 100 book sales.
Yes, they are.
People who already has an audience, a fan base, who's had that tipping point where they're beginning to have people looking for their next book. They're not looking for, I mean, yes, everybody wants the next great American novel, but they kind of want the whole package, too, that the author is a person that can go out and meet the public. And since you're at a lot of events, that's how a lot of the editors are meeting you, and that's a good thing.
I totally agree. And I always tell people, too, how it's changing. You can kind of look at it as a music industry. Now how a lot of writers are coming out with these mixtapes. So all they have to do is go into the studio, record the music, and then put them out there as digital downloads through iTunes and things like that. So they're bypassing the record labels and taking it straight to the consumers. So a lot of artists are doing the same thing, too, taking it straight to the consumers with these Kindles and these e-readers and things like that. So it's all like a strategy in the game, so it's definitely changing and evolving, so you have to make sure that you are changing and evolve with it.
Right, and that changes it for agents. I see myself as a writer first, editor and ghostwriter second, and then an agent third. And I've, you know, really almost recommended that writers now learn the whole business and learn how to do their own e-books and build their following, even if it's under
right.
them, versus, you know, counting on the industry, because right now the industry is in a flux, and we just have to be realistic. Why should you it's like they say, a bird in the hand is better than two in the bush. Or, you know, I always say hungry people will eat, because there have been a few little, you know, it's been some backlash, but I say I can't tell people, stop getting your $3,000 check from Kindle while you waiting, you know, to get a book deal. So,
well, you definitely right, and I love those checks. So, hey, and I think artists have tried to do it the both, you know, both ways. If you want to go with a major publisher to build that exposure, because that's how I look at it. Although it would be great to get those checks, you know, I definitely look at it for exposure, because I know that I'm always and always will be and probably will continue to be an independent writer. I will always put out some works independently. So when I do that, I would like to have that fan base and those followers to get my independent works as well. So if they could do both, definitely try to do both.
Right. J.A. Conrath, he does both. Now, he built his reputation first as a New York author, and now he makes a decent living as self-published, but they also he still has New York book deals. I mean,
right.
That's the ideal. That's the best of both worlds, and that's really what authors should shoot for, because I think what happens, once you get a book deal with one of the majors, you get that larger distribution and you get a credibility that I think a lot of writers like. And from what I'm even seeing, they're picking up self-published writers and having bidding wars on their books if their book is selling well enough. So bottom line is money, and we are in a bad economy. But books are still selling because people love entertainment, and books are entertainment. So
I agree.
No one needs to say, well, I need to stop writing because they're saying the economy is bad. Bad or not, people are reading even more. And matter of fact, the book sales were up this year in terms of the whole numbers, billion, it was a billion something, the figure I saw. And that's because of the e-book. So it has, that's a 20% market right now, but that's going to end up being probably a 50 or more percent in the next year or two.
Right. Yeah.
But let's talk about your book. What made you write The Ultimate No-No?
Well, The Ultimate No-No, I was 19 back in 2006. I had just, in a matter of 30 days, I had just lost my mother. Who had complications with diabetes, high blood pressure, and congestive heart failure, and her body just gave out, and so she passed. And this was 10 days, she died 10 days prior to my former husband going over to Iraq. And so, you know, that was difficult in itself. So here I'm dealing with my husband then going away, then my mother passing away, and then when my husband does return, I end up becoming pregnant. So now I'm pregnant, and I'd probably get pregnant maybe 2 weeks after the passing of my mother. And then my only sister gets sentenced to prison for a year for fraud charges. So now I look around, and my whole world is different. You know, my spouse is gone, my mother's gone, my sister's gone. Everybody in my close-knit circle is gone. And so I'm pretty much stuck. Kind of just, I'm stuck on my own, and I have to be able to survive, and you know, and then I have a fetus that's going inside of me, and I know I have to take care of myself and not be depressed because everything is going on. So I took to what I've done best my whole life, and that's right. And I got a large spiral journal, an ink pen, and just started writing. And it wasn't inspiring. It wasn't anything like that. It was just drama and pure entertainment. Because my state of mind, I just need to get away from my life. And I need to focus on something else that can really entertain me and take me away from my own problems. So therefore, I just made some characters, made them a hot ass mess. And I just wrote. And I wrote that book freehand. Freehand wrote that book within less than about 3 weeks. And I let it sit for 2 years until that year I started AABC and I started meeting all of these authors and all these writers. And I discovered that I could self-publish my own book. Because before that, I thought I had to get a book deal like you have to get a record deal. I didn't know that I could put out my own book. And when I discovered that, I took that dream that I've had since I was 12 and I ran with it. And I've been running ever since.
And you're still real young, so you got a long life ahead. How old are you now, 24 or 25?
I'm 25 now.
Okay, well then you've made a lot of progress because you have the young adult book, Cookie, How many books have you published for other people?
Oh, I have published two anthologies, and then three other novels, two anthologies, and then my novel. And then I have another book by one of my artists, Dana Black, that's coming out this winter. And then next year, I have two other writers that I'm working with. They're going to be coming out with their debut novels. So I do have other artists I'm working with, but I keep my circle small because I want to make sure that I give them the enough attention that they deserve. So, I mean, I'm not publishing a lot like a lot of people are doing, just pushing out books from themselves and their artists, like every season and things like that. I'm not doing that. I mean, because I want to devote and do time on enough projects. So, but I'm doing with something.
Well, that's good. I mean, you just said publish yourself. That's really good. And then didn't one of the anthologies win as best anthology of the year at the New York Literary Awards?
It did. The anthology I published last summer called Between the Sheets, which was an erotic collection of stories, was actually one for self-published art. For best anthology of the year at the African American Literary Awards.
Wow, and that wasn't even as a self-published. They considered it just the best. Pretty soon that word self-published is going to be dropped.
Right, yeah, I think it should. I think at some point it should. Maybe they just say indie writer. That even sounds better. I don't know, indie writer of the year. I don't know. But I think self-published maybe eventually definitely will be dropped because there's a lot of people coming out just doing it the independent route. And they're eventually branching out and, you know, getting these bigger deals and things of that nature. And some aren't. Some are just staying on the independent level. But there's so many people out there just doing it themselves. So you never know.
Well, did you have your books edited?
Say that one more time.
You had your books edited. I think you even used one of the editors I use, Alana.
Right. My editor now that I use for Delphine Publications is Alana Balton. And then I use two freelance editors as proofreaders to go behind her work. And then, of course, myself and the author themselves goes over the work to make sure that we catch as many mistakes as possible. So I do work with one main editor. And I started working with her with my third book, Will Love Ever Know Me. My first two novels was edited by other editors.
Okay, great. Well, it's good that you're, you know, so ambitious and doing so many things. Where are some of the places you went to promote The Ultimate No-No when it was reissued by Kensington in July? Was it July?
Oh, yeah, it was July. I was on a 30-day road trip, a 20-city book tour, and I set this up myself and my publicist at the time. And I went to, if I can remember, I'm gonna try to name out some places. Philadelphia, somewhere in Jersey, can't remember, New York, Maryland, several cities in Maryland, South Carolina, North Carolina. Went to South Carolina, I was in Greensboro and Winston-Salem. And then in North Carolina, I was in Charlotte. And then I drove down to Atlanta. I was in Atlanta for a few days, and I went to Demopolis, Alabama, and Birmingham, Alabama, Jackson, Mississippi, New Orleans, Houston, and then back home.
Oh, my goodness. And I met you in Houston on June 5th. So you went on your tour after that then, right?
After that, right. I went on the tour after that. Mm-hmm.
You don't let any grass grow under your feet.
Oh, not at all. My feet is never planted. I'm usually, between March and October, I'm usually on the road every month. So when you saw me in Houston, I was just in New York that week before for the BEA week, going to different networking parties and things like that. Again, making sure that I'm in the right situation at the right time, meeting people, rubbing the right shoulders, you know, things of that nature. And then right after that, when you saw me in Houston, that very next week, I was in Memphis. So I want to say that summer, even before I went on my 30-day road trip, I was on the road somewhere every weekend. Promoting.
Didn't you go to the National Book Club Conference as well?
I was there too, yeah. I was there that week. And that was the last weekend in July, somewhere around there. Last week in July, first weekend in August, one of them.
Oh, Oh, my goodness. And did you go to the thing they had in New Orleans that Brian...
The Bayou Soul class. And you just reminded me of something. I did not go to that event. But, however, when I was in Atlanta, I spoke with the organizer of that event. So, hopefully, I will be at the next year's event. And that's during the Essence Awards, I want to say.
Okay. Well, you really have been doing a lot to promote the ultimate no-no, and that's what it takes now. It really takes a lot of, we can do a lot of online, but sometimes it takes that face-to-face contact with people, too.
Well,
you kind of told us why you wrote your book, and, you know, I see a similarity in my first book is I had lost my mother, too, and it's like you have to get used to a whole new normal. Say you lose
right.
your mother, you lose your cover, and it's almost like you don't even know yourself. So writing is a way of kind of reorienting yourself to who the new you will have to be now that you don't have a mother. And I think that's a really good way to heal. So you discovered it early, and that might have been the, you know, it's really, my heart goes out to you that you lost a mother so young at 19. Oh, my goodness, huh? I would have been lost at this very young age. But, you know, the silver lining is it brought maturity because you have a lot of maturity that a lot of people older than you don't seem to have. And that's a good
thing. Well, I think it's because of who my mother was and also the fact that me becoming a mother at 16, I had to grow up sooner than what I necessarily wanted to. And so I just took my responsibilities, and I sucked it up, and I grew up. And so with that, I had to become more mature and take on responsibilities. And so then when my mother did get sick, unfortunately, she couldn't take care of me or oversee me like she wanted to my last year in high school or right when I graduated and things like that and going into my adulthood. She wasn't able to do those things, so I had to take on that responsibility. So I think that plays a lot into the fact that my life has never really been my age since I was about 16 years old. I've always seemed to live an older life.
Sometimes it's a good thing, you know, because, but don't be too old too fast because it's sitting here waiting for you.
When I saw you, and
congratulations on, you know, I mean, you just look really nice. So I said, oh, Tamika's lost weight. So, you know, but you look really young. And you had a young spirit. So, you know, and that's what I say, be young and enjoy life. Don't be too serious. You know, you're very serious for your age, but have fun.
Yeah, there's definitely a time in the season to be serious and a time in the season to just let loose and just have fun. And so I try to find my fine lining in different situations I'm in to make sure I'm acting the appropriate way. But for the most part, I can be really, really silly. Like, my close circle, they know that I'm really silly. I'm always singing, and I'm singing off-key. It doesn't matter where I am, I'm singing. And I'm just me. I'm just being free because, you know, I say I only live once. And right now I'm very, very satisfied with the path that God has led me on because I'm living my dream, and a lot of people have never do go and pursue their dream. And I'm 25, so I can only imagine, you know, if the Lord says the same, where I'll be at in 20 years by the time I'm 45. I mean, I need to be in, like, my $500,000 house, you know, with my Range Rover by then, most definitely. So I'm praying that he has the same plans that I want for myself.
Right. I mean, because you're doing, I mean, just what you said is so profound of living your own dreams. So many people are not living their dream. They're just miserable. And I like Oprah's new show she has. As a matter of fact, this has been the first one I really have enjoyed, Living Your Best Life, in the school that she's teaching, and where in my area it's on 219 on her own, on the OWN network. And I'm finding that pretty much everything she's saying is things I discovered it since I started living my dream. But I didn't live my dream for many years. I thought it was my dream, and I enjoyed what I was doing, but my real dream has been the writing, and it has taken me in different directions. Things I, even when I edit for people, I'm realizing it's so much more anointing because it is my calling. When you have a call on your life, so it's good that you're knowing now because so many people get my age, or even at the age I was when I left my job. I was in my middle 40s, and I was just good and sick and tired of it. When you're not doing what you really love, what your passion
right.
is, and that's what Steve Jobs just left that message behind, how to really be happy, you have to be a passionate person. You can make a difference in the world, because look how you're already making a difference. You open up a way for new authors to be promoted, and you had the book club and the radio show, and now you're publishing people. That's more than just you. That's a dream that's bigger than yourself, and that's generally when you know you're on your right path, when it's benefiting someone else in the world besides yourself.
I agree.
Yeah, you're doing a great job with it.
Thank you.
Yeah, so you're right. You're doing the right thing by being, because life is so short. We're not promised to be here any today or tomorrow, so you might as well be happy.
Might as well.
Yeah, well, what is your writing schedule like? I know when I have to call you about other business, you always say, well, I'm at the library. You're always doing something, and I like that.
Oh, I'm always doing something, but ironically, I make sure I watch my shows. I'm very addicted to TV. That is my guilty pleasure right there. So I have to find balance in the two, and plus I have two children. So I have to make sure I'm involved in whatever they're doing. And then plus, you know, I still sleep about 6 or 7 hours a day. So it's just that when I'm up and doing something, I'm doing something. I just want to make sure that my time is well spent. So if I'm watching TV, I'm watching TV for that 2 to 3 hours. And when I'm done with that, I jump into something that's more important than what I'm supposed to be doing. So I make sure that I get my me time in there, which is just TV, because I really, when I'm at home, I don't go out, I don't do any of that. I stay there for when I'm on the road. So I take care of home, I cook, I clean, I oversee my children. And then, like you said, I'm either at the library or I'm at Starbucks, because me working away from home helps me stay focused, and I'm able to punch out a lot of things I need to do for myself and other clients within, like, an hour or two, and I can get it done, like, in a quickness. If I'm at home and I'm sitting in my bed, I'll get lazy. I'll go and walk in the kitchen. I'll stand in front of the refrigerator. No, I'm not going to get nothing, but I just look at the refrigerator just to see what's in it. My writing schedule right now is just when I have the urgency to do it. I never sit down and write on the manuscript just because. If it's not coming to me, if it's not juicy, if I'm not entertained, if I can't sit here and say, ooh, what's about to happen next? Because I don't really plot out my stories. So as I'm writing it, I'm reading it. So I want to act like I'm the reader. And if I'm not entertained, I'm going to stop writing. I'm going to put it down. And I've done that. I put books down for a matter of a couple of months, and I won't even touch them. And I may even start a whole nother book until I feel the urgency to go back to that book. So my writing schedule is kind of all over the place. It's when I feel the urgency to write. And I need more pressure. So I'm hoping that something comes through one way or another, or I just start really just putting a lot more pressure on myself to really punch out these books, because I've been known to write books within a month or within 6 weeks. And, you know, the business aspects keeps me from writing books that so quickly, because I have to do so much other things. So hopefully one day I'll get back to that month timeline. We'll see.
Well, you seem to write pretty fast, even with the other things you're doing, once you're focused. And that makes a difference. When a story isn't flowing, sometimes it's best to put it down or write something else, because the main thing is you have to have the interest of the reader. And as you say, you're your first reader. If you're not interested, no one else would be.
Exactly.
And I wanted to know, do you do a lot of research when you're writing, or when you're not writing on your downtime? Do you do research?
I'm not certain, but I'm going to have to say no. And that's only because my first three novels was a series. Remind you, The Ultimate No-No, I wrote that when I was 19. And I was just writing from based off of what I knew from life at my age, which is why my voice in that book is so young. So you can tell that my characters and the things they do is immature. It's young. They're young-minded. So I wrote about what I knew. And so then part two and part three is the continuance of those characters, although my voice just changed in each book because I've gotten older. I didn't write part two until 3 years after I wrote part one. So I was older then. So my voice and things did change, but I was writing about the same character. And so then when I went into writing Cookie, which is my first and only so far young adult novel, it's based off of truth. is based off of myself and other girls I've known and growing up in the city of Fort Worth, Texas. So the only research I had to do is just confirm different places and things and situations that happen. And I had to go in and embellish and, not necessarily embellish, but broaden those plots and make them, you know, more interesting. So for that matter, I didn't have to really research on my first four books. But this book that I'm writing now, I just started a new book called Kisses Don't Lie. And I'm finding myself getting on Google, opening up these Webster books and these dictionaries and things like that, and I'm researching. I'm making sure that my information is right, because somebody's going to know. If you say my character went to Howard in Alabama, they're going to know that Howard is not in Alabama. You know, I need to make sure that I know what I'm talking about, and I'm doing, you know, and I'm making sure that I'm doing my research correctly. And like the jobs and things I'm having my characters do, I have to make sure that the way I describe them is correct, their roles and their responsibilities and their job role, make sure that I understand and know that, you know, just different things. So now I am researching. And it's new. I mean, I like it. It's definitely different, but I'm taking my writing a lot more seriously now and starting to write more mature as I become more of a woman, I grow up.
Right. And one of the things that I like that you said, that you're open to suggestions and that you're open to learning. And that's good, because writing is a lifelong learning process. I did a teleseminar yesterday on how to revise a screenplay. And even that, what I learned, can help with a novel. And since I do a lot of editing, content editing, as well as ghostwriting and then my own writing, I need to know. And so it's a non-ending process. So I'm glad that you didn't take any of the suggestions I gave you. You know, like, oh, my book doesn't need anything. You were so open to the suggestions, and I appreciate that.
I think anybody that's not open to suggestions is a fool, because you don't know everything. Not even the smartest person, in my opinion, knows everything. There's always something that you can learn, because, again, the world is always evolving. So there's always something new that you can learn. And I would be like Boo Boo the Fool to come at you and say, I don't agree with this, and I don't agree with that, when at the end of the day, I'm still learning myself. So I can't sit here and say that I know everything, because I don't. And, you know, first of all, like, I'm very young, so I mean, I'm still learning actual life skills. I told people I've had a fourth of the life crisis. You know, some people have midlife crisis. I've had a fourth of the life crisis, and I feel like I've just now started to know myself as a woman and as an individual, because I've always had a title of someone else, a mother, a homemaker, a wife, things, you know, things like that. And I put those roles ahead of what my own personal needs were. And so now I'm just starting to know who I am and become more involved in what Tamika actually wants in her life, as well as continue on taking care of home, taking care of my children. And that's why I always encourage women that you can definitely do it all, because I've been criticized. I've been talked about. I've been mistreated. Now I sound like the song. But I have, like, people have always said certain things, because when you're a mother, they feel like that you should be a mother and you should be at home and your dream should be in the past and you shouldn't pursue them, because everything else should come before that. And I always say, if you can do both, do both. If you're going to lose sleep to fulfill your dream and take care of home, well, lose sleep, because at the end of the day, you only live once. And I want to make sure I have no regrets when all is said and done.
Well, you know, I have the experience of working when people talked against you, and that was when they still have that argument going, the stay-at-home moms versus the working mother. Well, I worked, and I'm going to tell you, at this age, I'm so glad I worked, because I know a lot of people who, when you don't have any work experience and you get my age, you're scared to go out there and work, and you're not always promised to have a husband to take care of you. So it's good when women develop working skills and know how to work. When the children are grown, you have something to do. Besides, I have people, friends who have only been at home, and now they just want to, their life is talking about what their adult children are doing. You know, I have adult children. I'm concerned about their lives, but I also know how to cut it off. So it's good to have, every woman has to decide for herself, but I do believe you come out a lot better when you learn financial independence, when you learn how to
totally agree. And I think that's also like a debate that can really go on and on and on, because I've seen women that stay in a certain relationship only because they know if they leave, they wouldn't have anything, because they're so dependent upon that person to take care of them, and that's their lifeline. And I never want to feel like I'm obligated or I have to stay with someone because I won't be able to fend for myself, especially if you're a woman and a mother of children. You have to be able to take care of your own children. Now, not to say that that relationship won't ever let and won't make it, but what if that person dies? What if, you know, Lord is saying, you know, something natural happens and that person is no longer living? Then what? Then you're really going to be forced to go out, you know, be independent and taking care of yourself financially. So I just encourage women to, you know, be a little bit more independent and make sure that you can take care of yourself, you know, if all else fails.
All right, and this and the good thing about it, and then even if you're married and your mate becomes disabled, you need to know how to take care of your business. And
exactly.
A lot of women put so much, they put all their faith in their husband's money and that he's taking care of this, he's taking care of that, and a lot of women have had the rug pulled out from under them.
Exactly.
And then a lot of women, the sad thing is when they get left in that, some women really thrive. You know, if their husband dies, they can start a business, or they find out they have strengths they don't know. But a lot of women in the permanent underclass because they did not prepare themselves to be able to take care of themselves. So that needs to be the lessons that women teach their daughters too. Not to be so independent that you run a man away, but be independent that if everything fails, you can make it.
Life is not promised.
In
other words, just have something for yourself, whether you want a school, pursuing a degree, or, you know, you just working like a regular, you know, everyday government job or whatever. Just have something that gives you your own identity. Make sure you have your own identity and that you're happy. And any true man that loves you would understand the fact that you want to have your own identity. So, I mean, I can go on and on and on about women's rights and being independent. So, don't get me started.
Yeah, well, let me see if we have any emails. Do we have any emails today?
Yeah, we have two emails, actually.
Okay, go ahead.
The first one reads, you've written a number of books. Do you have any favorites?
My favorite book would be my third novel, Will Love Ever Know Me? Mainly because I took one of my characters in that book who was, I portrayed her as the perfect woman, the perfect image. She had no flaws. And in the third book, I took her character and I totally flipped it, and I showed you that even the most perfect person you think is the ideal person for you to look up to, they always have a story or something that's going on with them. So you may always look up to a mentor. You may feel like that they always have the questions, but know that that mentor also has their own story and their own issues as well. So with Love Ever Know Me, and I also feel that my writing was the strongest. And each book that I write, I feel like my writing grows, because when I work with my editors and I go back and forth with doing the editings and the corrections and making the story stronger, I learn my weaknesses and I learn my strengths. And so then I take everything I learn into my next book. So Will Love Ever Know Me is definitely my most favorite book.
All right. And the second question reads, what are some of the benefits and some of the downfalls of self-publishing?
Ooh, the benefits of self-publishing is, of course, all the proceeds come back to you. There's no middleman, except for the distributors, obviously. You know, you can't sell your book in Barnes & Noble, and Barnes & Noble might get their cut. So except for that, all the money comes back to you. You also have creative control. Your book cover can look exactly how it wants. At the end of the day, your storyline and the plot can look exactly like you want it. No one's going to tell you to change your character name. No one's going to tell you to change the ending of your story, not unless you want to. So when you're self-published, you are the boss. You have complete control over everything. But the downfall about that is, especially in this day and age, is this industry is just overly saturated with too many writers and too many writers that don't know what they're doing. Everyone thinks they can get on Microsoft Word, write up something, don't get it edited, and just upload it to an e-reader. And you have people that's doing it almost every day. So it's hard to kind of wean out the weak ones and those that don't need to be writing so that they can actually get you some great material that you worked hard for and spent your money on. And that's another thing. You have to pay for the project to get created. You got to pay for the editing. You got to pay for the layout and typesetting, the designs. You have to get your licensing and then get everything you need to get to the state. You have to set your distribution, things of that nature. You have to print the books. Self-publishing can definitely be costly. But if you've redone your research and you've actually, and you have the opportunity to talk and speak with other artists that are like yourself and find out what their mistakes were, then hopefully you can make the least amount of mistakes and you can save money and not make those mistakes that are going to end up being costly. Now, understand that you will make mistakes. There's no such thing as a perfect journey in this industry. You're going to make some mistakes that you should never made, and you're going to learn from them. You're going to become a stronger business person. So self-publishing at the end of the day, I like it because you have that creative control. All the proceeds and things come back to you. But when it comes to marketing and even letting people know that this book is out there, that's up to you, too. You don't have anyone that's backing you unless you hire a publicist or, you know, someone to market your book to get it out there. The only way consumers will know is if you repeatedly get out there and promote, which is why I have aggressively traveled, went to these places in this city and that city and all that to make sure that I get that exposure and people know that this book is out there.
All right. Well, that's it for now, but I'll let you know if we have any more. Thank you.
Cool. Thank you.
Thanks for those emails. Yes, those were some great answers and some great questions. Well, I have a new email that came to me that said, Amazon is tossing away the traditional publishing model and is about to scare the crap out of traditional publishers.
Right. I just saw that link today, too.
Oh, my goodness. And see, I started out self-publishing in 1995, and when I went to the first cruise in 2000, there was a division kind of like the New York published authors vis-a-vis or against the self-published authors. And I was self-published, so, but when I started getting paid to go places and having limousines pick me up, I started knowing then, hey, this is a pretty good deal here.
Right. Well, they're not even really doing that anymore, not even to some of the, you know, well-established and veteran writers, because the industry is shifted. You know, it's going digital, and like with Amazon doing it now, they're cutting out, again, they're cutting out the top man, you know, the middleman. They're going straight to the authors. And that's kind of how I compared it with the music industry, with these artists going to the studio, they're recording this music, and they're putting them out as mixtapes. And because the world is going digital, and people are downloading iTunes and things like that, they're just putting it out there on iTunes, and people just download them digitally, and the label doesn't get any of that. So it's, to me, when I saw it, I was like, oh, okay, well, I knew that was going to happen. I mean, I could see it happening already. So from, you know, my perspective, that wasn't a complete shocker to me. But still, at the end of the day, artists still need to research and make sure that that will be the best route for them. Because at the end of the day, you may not still need to go that route. You can still go and totally do self-publishing yourself wholeheartedly.
Right. Well, at least we have the options now. Now you don't have to feel like you've been put out of the industry and that gatekeepers hold the key to your happiness. If you're really a writer, you will write regardless of a book deal, not having one. And now you've got all this support. It used to be when you self-publish your books, you could almost point out, oh, that's a self-published book. I can't always tell now because the books look so good, the graphic designs. Are much cheaper, too. It used to cost almost $1,800 to get a cover. It's not, you know, you can get one for $300 to $600, and, much cheaper. And then everything used to be offset printing. You used to have to pay $4,000. I paid
$4,000 and $5,000
to get 1,000 books, and then I messed up 7,000 on my first set of books. It was pitiful. So you had to make a lot of mistakes. You don't have to do that now because of print-on-demand and the e-books.
Right, and it had really shocked me. I can't remember the company, but it was a New York publisher, a major publisher that's used to publishing or printing sometimes they want 10,000 to 30,000 books at one time and sending them out to different bookstores. But they recently decided to go print on demand because they see that everything is going digital and not that many people were buying paperbacks as much. And so if you sit there and say that a major publisher is going print on demand, well, then maybe print on demand is not as shameful as, you know, the industry is trying to portray. You know, some people will look and say, oh, you're print on demand? or you can't afford, or you're not big enough to do some offset printing and have your books print in the thousands. Well, that's not really a smart move now. You can't really push thousands of paperback books like you usually can, like you used to back in the day, especially as a self-published author now. It's not. It's really not that. It's not. To me, it's
not cost effective.
It's not really cost effective for you to do that. So, for being print on demand, to me, is really, really smart. A really smart move, because you, in the long run, you're not going to be forced to be sitting with, you know, thousands of books that you can't get rid of.
Right, and then the other thing too is that the return policy is so antiquated and so outdated that with print on demand, they, most of the times you can hit that box where they cannot return the books. And that's where a lot of stores were staying in business. Just based on having those books in the stores, they could run their whole store and never pay an author a penny. Because a year later, they could send the books back to the publisher, but you can't do that now.
Right.
So it's a whole new day. Well, give out your website. I forgot to get your website.
My website, everything is my name. So it's always easy to find me. And my name is Tamika. It's T-A-M-I-K-A. And last name is Newhouse, spelled like it sounds, N-E-W-H-O-U-S-E. And my website is TamikaNewhouse.com. I'm on Twitter at Tamika Newhouse. I'm on Facebook at Tamika Newhouse. And I think that's pretty much all that's important. You know, my website, Twitter, and Facebook. That's it.
Okay. Are you on LinkedIn or...
I am. I'm on LinkedIn, but I'm really, I haven't really been on LinkedIn. I don't really know how to work it yet, so I'm going to work on that. But I'm on that, too, as my name, Tamika Newhouse. And then I do have a MySpace page, but I haven't logged into that since, like, 09. But,
nobody hardly goes up there. I still go and put a little thing up there, but it's like going up there and like a graveyard now. There used to be so many people now to say none of your friends online.
Right, like nobody's over there. So I do have that, I mean, and then I do have a blog. It's TamikaNews.wordpress.com. And that's pretty much how you can find me. If you can't remember anything else, you can just Google my name, Tamika Newhouse.
Okay, and if writers want to come on your show, how would they contact you to come on your show?
I had hosted ABC Radio since 2008, and I recently just ended my run hosting the show in September of this year. And it will come back on the air in November, and it will have a whole new host. So if you want to get on that show, you can still email me directly at aambookclub@gmail.com, or you can simply Google the letters AAMBC, and then you can be able to direct you to our website, and you can contact us through there. But to get on the show, all you got to do is ask, and we'll interview you.
Okay, and then how about for your book club?
So on Book Club, the website again is as well as aambookclub.com. On Facebook, it's facebook.com/aambookclub. On Twitter, it's at aambookclub. And we're building on those followers as well. We've gotten over 3,000 new followers within a week and a half. I'm hoping to tap into 20,000. So if you're on Twitter, definitely go in there and follow us. And again, if you can't remember any of that, just Google the letters AAMBC.
Wow, that is really great, you know, because that is helping writers too. How often do you feature a writer? Once a month on your site?
Yeah, I feature on the most I will ever feature is 8 different writers a month on the website, whether it's from a book of the month or a virtual tour. And I work with them for 30 days. And then every month we switch out. It's something different every month. And again, like I said before, you're going to always see books on there that you rarely see anywhere else. And so you can go to the website at aambookclub.com and subscribe to that website so that anytime anything is updated on there, it comes straight to your newsletter. And we have columnists now to interview independent writers. We have a Hot Topics column. We have a Lit-ish column where we may put up exclusive news or some gossip or whatever, or maybe something that's circulating that may be going on, things of that nature. So we try to kind of make it like an entertainment blog for writers, for black writers. So that's the angle I'm working with.
You really have you have a lot of thoughts going,
which I understand because I do the same thing. How do you manage your time? You know, you're a mother, you run a business, you're a writer, and you travel.
I multitask. And when I'm out of town, my godmother or my children's father, they are very, very supportive. And so they'll either be with them so they can go to school and things of that nature. And then I do a lot of traveling during the summer. That way I can send them off to their grandmother, and they'll be with them for the whole summer back in my hometown of Fort Worth. But, you know, during, like, the off-season, like in the winter and the spring and the fall and things like that, I just multitask, and I'm doing multiple things. Like sitting here with you, I could have been writing some notes or on the computer or glancing at the TV or something like that. I'm just multitasking. Or I could have been cooking. Sometimes I do interviews and I cook at the same time. So it's definitely doable. I don't really like to hear excuses on why you can't pursue your dream. I just think that people don't like to put in the work, and then they just give up too soon. I think as long as I'm living, I'm never going to give up. So as long as you're living, just don't give up. Because if you give up, you're only going to get what you currently have, and that may be nothing or not what you want. So just continue to strive. And if the Lord says the same, before you're gone, before you're dead and gone, he would have given you what you desire.
You just might as well use up your life versus saving it up for, you know, how people have China that they don't use.
Right, which I don't understand. Like, nice stuff, like places, you don't even use it. You won't even give it away. So, yeah, so I understand that.
Up all your talents, just like the Bible, parables of the talent. The person who uses their talent generally is more blessed, and they're multiplied versus taking one talent and burying it. And that's what happens when you don't let people know you have a gift. A lot of people are ashamed to show their writing. They don't want anybody to see it. And there's nothing new under the sun. We haven't said, and if anything, what makes you stand out is when you're different, when you're unique, when you're outrageous. That's why we see Lady Gaga and Nicki Minaj and all these different
people. I totally agree. Exactly.
And the same with the writers. The writers who take the most risk, because even though you're young, I have seen an edginess in your writing that you go where people will say, oh, my goodness, no, they didn't. that is making people, their jaw drop all on the ground like, oh, no, they didn't.
Yeah, never give them what they expect. That's just boring.
Yeah, and be unpredictable, because humans are unpredictable. You put them in situations that show where people can't predict what they will do. Always put them in very scary type, not scary, but situations that are not easy to say, oh, it's going to be easy. Well, they have to make a choice between the lesser of two evils sometime.
Right.
All the best books are generally those type of books where they're not boring. That's number one. You know, that's one thing I've seen in your writing as far as not boring. I read Cookie in one afternoon. I thought that was really good for young adult. And the other book, I haven't read the Ultimate No-No, but I've read the second one, and it's good. So, you know, it lets me know that you've got, you know, the raw talent here. And it's just going to, as time, you know, with as you get better and better with each book, and that's just what this is. This is constantly raising the bar, say, on the next book, we're going to try this. So I'm glad you're doing something different with your new book. You know, change voices, sometimes change tenses, just do different things. Always try something new.
Right, right. So this is definitely a challenge for me. So I'm eager to see how it all ends, which is why I think this one will be written pretty fast, because I write in first person. That's my comfort zone. So now I'm doing something different, and I so far I think I've done a great job. I don't know. You'll see. You'll read it, so we'll see. You'll let me know.
Okay. Well, you know, third person for me is easier than first person. First person can be hard, so you mastered really, and from what I've read in the different books, they all said that first person is the hardest voice to write in, because that character has to, you know, have such an interesting voice that they can carry the story by themselves.
Right.
And you had multiple characters, but, you know, each one of them were different, and you did good. So I'm sure you'll do good with third person. For me, third person is easier, because you can kind of jump all over and be and see things that you can't see in first person.
Right, exactly. And I've noticed that when I'm writing third person. I'm like, oh, this is interesting. I can say this and I can say that, where I couldn't say it when I was in first person. So But yeah, so this is going to be interesting. So I'm really anxious to see how this book kind of turns out.
Okay, well, I'm ready to let you go, Tamika. Thank you for coming on the show, and I'm sorry I didn't have you sooner, but I think it's all in the perfect timing. Now you had all these announcements and all this new stuff. I think this is just divine order in the perfect time, and so will the book deal, the next book deal.
Yes, ma'am. It's all in the making.
Oh, yes, I can see big things and good things because you already have a vision and a dream of what you want to do, and that's part of the battle.
Right. I agree.
Okay.
Well, Natasha, really appreciate it for you having me on. Had a great conversation. It didn't even really seem like an interview. So I really appreciate you having me on and expose me to your audience. And hopefully in the future, somewhere down the line, I'll come back and I can talk you guys ear off again.
Okay. And you know what? You did get to give out that book. So whoever that first person who emailed in, if they could email you, Tamika, and you can send them the book. What was what's your email address?
The best email to email me is at aambookclub@gmail.com. Again, it's aambookclub@gmail.com. Just email me your name and your mail address, and I'll send it right out an autographed copy.
Okay. Well, thanks again and continued success. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Maxine. Have a good night.
All right. You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Please return next week to the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show. See you then. Love you all.